Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. Today, joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you doing?
Things could be better, hey? But, this is Mzanzi, so to complain is merely to spit in the wind.
Indeed, indeed. And also, I always live by the adage that it could always be worse, because indeed it can always be worse. So we must count our blessings while we have them. Let us start off today's show by talking about Johannesburg and money not being managed very well. So this story caught my eye. I was looking for stuff to talk about today on the Daily Maverick site, and this story was just kind of one of those ones that makes you sort of want to despair at how outrageous it is. On the 13th of June, 2025, Johannesburg Water told the Children's Memorial Institute that it intended to cut off water supply due to non-compliance with the city's bylaw. Less than 24 hours later, supply was cut off. This institute, which is in Bromfontein, is a centralized hub for services for vulnerable and special needs children. It houses more than 20 NGOs and was linked to Charlotte Matreke, Joburg Academic Hospital. In fact, the hospital's laundry is, I believe, in the building. It's got a bunch of NGOs, the Teddy Bear Clinic, Tusanani Children's Foundation, various sort of places for basically like orphans and mentally challenged children and that kind of thing. And they haven't had water for quite a while. They are now going to court to get their water restored. They say that they were not given the 30 days notice, which they're supposed to be given before the city cuts them off, to rectify any problems that they may have existed with their compliance. The city says that they had bypassed their water meter, at least that's the implication. The spokesperson for the city said, customers found to have connected water illegally are issued with illegal connection compliance notice by the city of Johannesburg. Okay, well, if they did connect their water illegally, that doesn't sound great. But then you look into the background of it as contained in the story, and apparently this institute had an agreement with the Charlotte Matreke Hospital to pay their water bill because they were, providing these services for the hospital, healthcare services, that sort of thing. But apparently, without telling them, the hospital just stopped paying the water bill in 2018, which they only found out a few years later when they received a huge bill. So I don't know if they illegally connected their water after that date, but it does kind of seem a little bit understandable if they're suddenly hit with this massive water bill that they can't pay and they need to get water, that they might be tempted to go around things. Anyway, point being, this has clearly not been handled well by the city, and considering the sheer volume of billing issues and problems with illegal cutoffs or unfair cutoffs being carried out across the city, people getting the wrong bills, people getting these like ridiculously inflated bills, accounts that just don't seem to make sense, I suspect that the city may be at fault here. Terence, what's your take on this one?
Well, I can identify with that since I've been in that position myself. And actually, should I say, I am in that position myself. Interesting thing. We have my household has a dispute. We went to try and register it. We got to, and we actually got to the physical premises, and everyone was leaving because they had no water that day. So water being very much a theme in the sort of biblical apocalyptic drought sense of the word. Apocalyptic also being a good term to apply to management in much of the South African state. Yeah, it's utterly tragic. You know, think about this. I mean, I moved to Johannesburg in 1997, and at that stage, it was a bustling city, with huge problems. But it was an exciting place to be. 20 years ago, this was a city on the move. I remember, you drove through Soweto, and what City Parks had done with it. I mean, this wasn't township as the sort of political adage would have had it back in the 80s of dusty streets and rank poverty. It was, these are nice up-and-coming suburbs now. These days, it's a massive dysfunction where the local state sort of regards the people or its residents as minions to serve itself, the kind of kind of Sumerian sacrifice of your wealth and well-being for the great god of local administration, which does little enough to administer. So you might as well pray to some large stone idol of a bull or something. I don't know. Maybe that's more effective. Yeah, but I think it also exposes the hideous underbelly of poor administration and human rights. You know, South Africa planted its constitution thick with socioeconomic entitlements, and there was some dispute over the wisdom of so doing. But you know, they're there. That was only ever possible if two things occurred. First of all, you had a kind of capacitated, competent civil service, not one that is demographically representative or whatever, but you know, people who actually know how to do the job. And as I've said before, if those are all one-legged Chinese lesbian dwarves, I'm quite happy with that. As long as they can keep the power flowing and keep the water. Keep the water going through the pipes, and keep the potholes. Well, we'd rather not have potholes. It's not that we want better potholes. We want no potholes. And a growing economy. And I think the problem is that the actions of the former, or the inactions and inefficiencies of the former, have pretty much ruled out the latter. I mean, we have this dreadful feedback loop. We've got to, something has to give. I'd personally be in favor of a large class action suit, brought by a consortium of the best law firms in the city to effectively say, start treating your citizens with, it doesn't even have to be respect, but a modicum of competence.
We do have a constitutional right to dignity, don't we?
Yeah, well, we also
see the way that Joburg treats its residents. I wouldn't call that dignity.
Yeah, another experience we had was trying to get through on the phone, and after holding for I think about 40 minutes, it went straight to that message. Can you please rate the service? Well, all I've heard is your bloody elevator music and this voiceover saying your call is important to us. No, your call is not important to us. Otherwise, you would have answered the call.
Yeah, what's even crazier about this is that the billing crisis in Johannesburg is actually very old. It's been going since I think at least 2010, 2011, somewhere around there. And it's gone through sort of phases where it got better, it got worse, but it does seem as though we're heading back into one of those phases of it getting worse. And it's clear that the underlying causes, which I don't fully understand, are many. Some of it involves corruption. I've heard allegations for a long time that there are dodgy links between the cutoff companies and the people who are issuing the bills. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've heard. There's problems with the structuring. There's problems with appointing kind of cadres and comrades to positions that that require technical competence. Problems of management. Just sort of the general issues. And the fact that the problem is old and still hasn't been solved, in fact, seems to be getting worse again, I think it's just kind of an epitome of the general failure of governance in Johannesburg, particularly in the last couple of years.
Yeah, look, I remember we've been in this residence for, I'm just going to say, round figure, 15 years, and we never really had any problems at the beginning. For which we were very grateful, because, as you say, this issue, the billing chaos has been hanging around for a long time. But I do remember around about 2017, we started to get these notices plastered to our gate sort of every once a month, threatening us with a cut off. That seemed to me to be so unnecessarily confrontational. We had always paid. And then we were cut off over an error. We were set an account for 78,000 rand. Now, I don't know about you, but I could run every device in my house, and this was during load shedding as well. And I'm not going to get to 78,000 rand. But I remember distinctly one day we were visited by three people to read the meter, and I think the next day there was someone here to cut us off. Now, with the dispute I'm currently in, it has been informally admitted to me by a senior manager that yes, that he can see just looking at the account there's a problem, and he'll send someone to do a proper reading. Well, that's we time is a ticking on. There's no such enthusiasm to go and do that, but to cut us off, well, we can have three people, we can have three different companies showing up on the same day, and we can have your lights off the next day.
Yeah,
And
and
yeah,
being a
when yeah.
being a an NGO service for disabled children and orphans and things doesn't protect you either. So,
Yeah,
why should ordinary
you would,
citizens be exempt?
but there again, I think that shows the hollowness of this nonsense about being a caring government. And do you remember during COVID, charitable institutions being shut down? Good Lord, we can't possibly have someone handing out sandwiches to homeless people. No. You might be exposed to COVID or something. We can, however, rough you up and go after you for buying closed shoes or something. It's you know there's a grotesqueness about this.
Yes.
And I think it's instructive to remember that grotesque doesn't necessarily mean ugly. It's this kind of funny meshing, or this meshing between humorous, absurd, and obscene.
Yes.
So.
And at the same time, we have I think today the president was in very boring opening remarks talk opening the national dialogue, which I think is estimated to cost. I think the figure I've seen in the media is 700 million rand. It just turns out that mayor of Joburg, Dado Marrero, in perhaps not thinking through exactly how this would go down, has said that it would cost about the exact same figure, 700 million rand, to fix all the potholes in Johannesburg. Now he's currently declaring war on potholes, which has happened, I think, several times. And the city of Joburg tends to lose those wars. So I don't know, the third Joburg v pothole war, maybe this will be a different result. But it kind of brings it to sort of, you look, I think you can get a bit silly when you play games of saying, oh, we're spending 23 million rand on this, or when we could be spending it on this, or we would buy this many houses, because budgeting is complicated. You're spending money on a lot of things. Certain amounts of money are really not that much, and often is a way of avoiding talking about the biggest costs and the biggest items in budgets. That being said, it really is a bit of a sort of finger in the eye that we've got this infrastructure problem in our most important city, and it turns out that the bill to fix it is apparently exactly the same as we're wasting on what will be a talk shop.
Oh, well, as the youngsters would say, totes. Maybe it's not the youngsters, but from when I was a bit younger. But then, Mayor Marrera is known for, having sucked a bit of the old Harry Potter truth serum from time to time, like when he came in and said, "Oh, don't expect anything, because nothing's going to happen." I mean, maybe that's better than yes, we're going to turn things around, than doing a Cyril on the country, and then using the people to clean up after you. Yeah, that's a dreadful image. But yeah, I see that a sense of concern. I'm not going to call it urgency, because I don't think we get that we get that far with our political elite, but a sense of concern has arisen, since Joburg is hosting a big G20 shindig. So some parts of it might be tarted up, and who knows, maybe that's the need to sort of get some extra cash in. And maybe that's why. And I've been told that apparently this sort of blaze of inflated bills is not a problem unique to my household. But yeah,
no,
you know,
that's very much the case.
So you know, who knows? Maybe there's a need to sort of bring a little extra cash in to make sure that, you know, as the Chinese and Italian finance ministers or heads of state are heading down the heading down Jan Smuts Avenue or whatever it'll be called by that stage, you know, they don't rattle the fillings in their teeth.
we've had I think 16 good minutes of whining, but Terence, you actually have written a paper on fixing the public service. And that's a slightly different question from fixing local government public service, but there is a relationship there. Yeah. You know, what should government, what should the politicians actually be doing to fix some of these problems?
Well, look, there's the policy side of things, which ultimately what you want is the civil service or the public service to be moved out of the sort of political realm, which is where it is structurally, because MECs and ministers have enormous influence over those positions. The idea back in the early 90s was for the Public Service Commission to perform that kind of role, and this would be removed from politics. And you know, the public service would exist as a kind of permanent career-oriented body. So you want to do that. You also need to get the politics out of it. Which is the cadre deployment and the tenderpreneuring and all that sort of thing. And then it's a question of management. You know, people who are actually who are in charge of staff need to actually do those jobs. So when I send my repeated emails asking for some sort of action to the guy who promised it, he needs to either take charge of that, or he needs to pass it on to somebody and make sure that person performs it. I mean, yeah, that's the, you know, the way that anything from a convenience store to a multinational enterprise functions. It's just the complexity that's different. And then within that you need to promote ongoing sort of capacitation, so the people are given the tools to do their jobs. They're given a sense of pride and accomplishment in it. But the National Planning Commission said, and I think this is one of the most revealing phrases of post-1994 South Africa, is the National Planning Commission said there has been a rejection of meritocracy. In other words, you know, that's not saying that, you know, we haven't got it right. That's saying there's been an active attitude that we don't want it. And, you know, that's quite true. Chaos and dysfunction is good for crooked and incompetent politics.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to talking about, I'm afraid it's another governance failure, but probably worth talking about. Yesterday, Michael and I on the show were talking about how if South Africans were set free, if our opportunities were truly embraced, that we actually really do have the potential to really turn things around. We talked specifically in that episode about the mining system. And let's go a little bit more into that, specifically focusing on the issue of the cadastral system. So the government has been promising this cadastral system for many years. That's basically a sort of online portal where if you're a mining company who's interested in mining in South Africa, you can go to this website, you can see sort of where the country's mineral resources are, and then you can use it to apply for a mining license. It's the sort of bare minimum. There's no policy changes here. It's just we're making a system that will make it easy to do the basics of setting up a business. Nothing anyone disagrees with. Even the most communist committee, apart from the fact that it's private companies coming to mine, would object to the system. And yet it's taken ages and ages to set up. Last year, Minister of Mining Gweda Mantashe promised that the system would be up and running by June. Well, it's July and the system is not up and running. And indeed, as June approached, it was delayed once again. This is really a problem specifically for prospecting because, you know, mining companies don't always know, you know, you don't know what minerals are where. You sort of have a general idea because you know about the rock, but you have to actually go and sort of dig a bit and see what the ground has. And because the system is not currently very functional, the system that we do have for setting up prospecting stuff, South Africa's share of global exploration spending from mining has fallen from 5% 20 years ago of all global spending for prospecting to under 1%. In other words, new mines are not even being explored here. So, of course, that means that the mining industry is not going to be growing anytime soon. But, you know, with the system delayed, the Department of Mining said, well, no, it's okay. Don't worry. We're gonna launch it in just one province. We're going to launch it in the Western Cape to start off with, and that'll be the first place where we'll test it out and work out the bugs. And then they delayed that again for 3 more months. So, you know, Terrence, I think this is another great example of just sort of, I mean, one wonders entirely what the reason is for this is. Is it because of that rejection of meritocracy stuff you were talking about? I mean, that's obviously part of the story here. But chaos and confusion definitely actually contributes to those who want to line their pockets. Now, if the system is opaque and difficult to get a license through, you know, a dodgy company might be tempted to offer officials, shall we say, some extra private incentives in order to fast track their applications. I don't know. What's your take on the story?
You know, I'm reminded of a movie I watched about 20 years ago called Rogue Trader, which is about the collapse of Barings Bank and, you know, about all the hubris while, you know, this guy was making up numbers and spending all their money. And there's a particular character who was presented as quite a blowhard who kept on telling everyone how great this guy was because he was on the information curve. You got the sense this guy didn't actually understand what the information curve was. And I think that this is there's probably a very strong element of that we have people who don't understand the economy, you know, trying to make economic policy and, you know, drive these developmental interventions. You've got people who don't really understand mining and often have a very jaundiced view of the mining industry. Certainly, I don't think they get the science behind it. You know, geology is a very complex field, and this is really what the Gnesta speaks to. So I just, you know, I don't think that there is a great deal of, you know, call it gut level understanding of how important this is. You know, the idea that, you know, when the National Democratic Revolution revolutionizes the country, all this is going to fall into place. You know, I gather that Greta Thunberg's family believes that, you know, school places for kids with learning disabilities and climate change are all part of the same system. And if we can just solve the whole system problem, you know, all those kids get places in schools. This was something that was raised about her because she attended a school like that, which is apparently something that, you know, thousands of parents would begging to get their kids into it. She was taking every Friday off. You know, and so why does she get this position where my kid doesn't? But yeah, you know, South Africa has something like a trillion dollars. I'm not sure of the denomination of mineral resources still in the ground.
I think dollars. I'll have to check that.
But point is, it's a lot of money, but you know, it's the kind of thing that there's increasingly needing innovation and you know, creative thinking to extract. It's not South African mining is passed with those dripping roasts, as they call them. You know, big seams where you could, you know, effectively, you know, sink a massive shaft. Now it's much more, you know, leaning on small modular systems. But yeah, you know, once again, that's going to take a new approach, and everything seems to have been done in the mining industry to cut a few insiders in at the expense of the sustainability of the entire system.
So the next frontier in this is that South Africa may well have oil off its coast, or gas, or, you know, some kind of valuable extraction mineral. Shell has just been granted environmental authorization to drill 5 deep water wells off the West Coast, the company said on Friday. The company said that should viable resources be found offshore, this could significantly contribute to South Africa's energy security and government economic development programs. Shell did try to drill some stuff on the East Coast, but that was blocked by court litigation, and I think that court case is still going on, arguing about whether they're allowed to drill there or not. But Terence, what's your take on this? I mean, this is sort of the next frontier. If it turns out that we, you know, do have big gas or oil or whatever reserves off our coasts, you know, there'd obviously benefits, huge amounts of cash for the state, potentially. And also lots of negatives. You can end up like Equatorial Guinea, which is not a place that any country should want to be.
Sure. No, look, I look at this with trepidation, and not just because I'm a secret environmentalist squish, because natural resources in an environment of corruption can be very, very hazardous. If you're Norway or the Netherlands or whatever, you're okay. Or Scotland. If you are Equatorial Guinea, as you say, you turn into a sort of petro-fascist thug state. My concern is that we've already kind of gone far enough down the road that you know, you could see enormous shakedowns. But my sense is that to actually start pulling the stuff up in commercial quantities, there are going to be so many burdens imposed that I wonder if it'll really get off the ground. You know, top tip, everyone: too much greed is a bad thing. A little bit of greed, people can still deal with. You know, it's the 10. It's, you know, are you taking 10% or are you taking 90%? At 10%, people can work with you. At 90%, not so much.
Yeah, we need sustainable corruption models. I think that's actually kind of the key here. Is, you know, the debate about whether we should be, you know, embracing fossil fuels, as environmentalists would say, or whether we should be concerned that there might be, you know, money might be stolen, or the state will become divorced from governance because it'll live off of oil. It doesn't matter if you don't even get the oil out the ground in the first place. So, we need to fix those policy problems first, the things that, you know, require these huge BEE.
There is a direct line between the problem that those NGOs are having with their water and what the outcome of pumping natural gas out of the sea is. Do not think these two things are separate. I've said it before. There's a connection between the potholes in Joburg and our Trump tariffs. You know, both speak to government incapacity.
That's well said, sir. Well said. All right. Now let's finish off today with a little bit of a more enjoyable story. I must say, based on comments I see on our podcasts and the things we say, I do not think that there's a lot of MK Party supporters who listen to our show on a regular basis. That being said, this one, for the few of you that do exist, this may be interesting to you. The MK Party is hosting what they call, in the story, it's reported as a youth golf development. I don't know why it's called that, because it's a fundraiser for the party, and the party is quite upfront about that. This is going to be happening, I think, today, so it might be a little bit late. But anyway, Jacob Zuma is going to be on the golf course there. And if you pay 250,000 Rand or 25,000 Rand, you will be able to play golf with him for the bigger share. And for the 25,000 Rand, you can share a table with him at the gala dinner that evening. This is described as the gold passage. Okay, that's a bit expensive. Well, maybe you want to instead play golf with John Klopper, in which case you can pay 100,000 Rand. Or maybe you want to hang out with the caucus of MK, parliamentary caucus, you know, that is an ever-changing group of people. But anyway, that's 50,000 Rand. For 5,000 Rand, you can sit at a seat with a bunch of MK MPs. Well, lots of opportunities here to hang out with Zoom. I've heard that he's a very fun guy to be around. I'm not sure if I would pay 250,000 rand to play golf with him, mostly because I can't play golf. Terence, is MK, you know, I wonder what MK's attendance is going to be at this event.
Oh, there is so much going on here. Okay, first of all, I wonder if he's going to be one of those little Andy cap hats, because that would seem to be very Eurocentric, or maybe, you know, like baggy pants with tartans on, socks pulled up. Golf, you know, is kind of like the ultimate colonial sport. You know, we see this all the time. You got these like these lefty types who get really upset about golf courses because these must all be turned into social housing units. Although, actually, I once tried to be smart and suggested that. My lefty opponent sort of said, how many golf courses do you really think there are in Joburg? Does they even touch sides? So, you know, so top tip, people. But be that as it may. Secondly, I'm presuming he plays golf. But, you know, apparently very accomplished chess player, so don't underestimate him. And I don't think he'll have to cheat on this, because I imagine he's probably very good at it. Do not underestimate Mshalozi.
That's definitely a good piece of advice for anyone
top in South Africa. Top sustainable corruption and don't underestimate Mshalozi. You heard it on the Daily French Show. Right. But, yeah, you know, will they have a turnout? I imagine so. There's lots of people who want to curry favor, and I think that Jacob Zuma represents, shall we say, embodies the type of politics that made that possible. I will say, though, in his defense, his turn in government merely crested the wave that his predecessors had set in motion. And those who hope that it was that all this was over, you know, when he was ejected from office, should bear in mind that our current president rode shotgun with him for the height of that state capture period, and has done nothing to vanishingly little. Let me be charitable, vanishingly little to chase that tide back. I will say this, from everything I've heard, and this comes from Helen Ziller as one, Zuma is a great raconteur, very, very engaging guy to hang out with. And as Helen Ziller said, the most charming man I've ever met. So maybe, you know, $250,000 is something you're willing to play, you're willing to pay for a day with it.
You know, as the story points out, when Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC were doing a similar type of fundraising, it was, I think, 1 million rand to be at the same table as Ramaphosa. And you know what? You're going to get much more bang for your buck if you're going to have Zuma. I can tell you that much right now. it's going to be a much funner day. But, you know, there is a part of me that has always kind of been slightly fascinated with the idea of what if Jacob Zuma used his powers for good. I do think he is a vastly underestimated, cunning and charismatic figure who unfortunately has used his considerable talents to make the country worse. So there is a small part of me that's always wondered about what if he had been a performer.
Let us remember, though, you cannot use the weapon of the enemy against the enemy. As Aragorn, son of Arathorn, said to Boromir, you cannot use the One Ring, you know, to hold off the orcs. I don't think that this is that. I think that deep down in Zuma's own consciousness, he really believes that what he did was great. I think that is probably part of the tragedy that. Yeah. He genuinely doesn't see the problem.
No, that is kind of horrific considering how much damage his presidency caused the country. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will, of course, be back next week on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful weekend.